I think the highlight of the conference is always Mathy comes in, and he's assistant administrator and has given the program real support since he was brought into the EPA. He was involved in job training and also in environmental justice. And since he's come into the program, has taken upon himself to look seriously at this whole issue of job training. And, of course, it fits into the president's program of jobs. And I think the two of them are going to make the get the program, I think, is going to expand fairly dramatically in the next year or two. Did you get that impression, Tim, from that conference?
Yeah, just the fact that they're going to kind of change the, you know, it's not going to be called Brownfield, they're going to change the title and kind of broaden the scope of things.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to take in, be more encompassing of environmental issues.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I think was interesting is that when Brownfields first started, of course, St. Louis was there in the early days when Mike Holmes, and first they were highly restricted. People had to be working on a brownfield site, and I think they soon realized that brownfields work is a lot like any other construction work there, that you see the cordoned off areas with the fence around it, and there's nobody on the site, and they'll do some work, and then they'll move on to some other site, and they'll do some other work. And so I think that most of the grantees early on were treating this kind of like you would any construction job. You're going to be hopping from job to job. You're going to be doing some environmental work. You might be doing some other work, though, that has to do with construction and jumping from job to job and then coming back to the environmental. But the key thing is that you had these certifications that allowed you to work on the site. And where others couldn't go on a site, you had your 40-hour waste site worker, and you were able to go on the site while others couldn't. Or you would, if it was painting and there was going to be lead involved and you had the lead cert, you could supervise the group. Or if it was asbestos, you know, you could work on asbestos, that type of thing. Who just joined?
Rebecca Rosco, Cochise College.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hi.
We were just talking about the annual meeting. Who just joined? Someone else just joined?
Derek.
Oh, Derek. Hey, Derek. How's it
going? How you doing?
Good. We were.
I wasn't at the conference. What are they going to change the name? What are they considering changing the name of Brownfields to?
Well, it's going to be an environmental job training program and workforce and development program. So I don't know if they've completely settled on an acronym, but what's going to happen? And the interesting thing at the conference, that first night was kind of strange to a lot of people. We had a panel. Who just joined?
Heather Smith from Houston,
Heather.
Texas.
Houston. At the first evening session, yes, someone just joined?
Someone Hi, just joined? This is Glow.
Hey, Glow. We're talking about the annual meeting.
Yeah.
And the big thing that happened, the question was asked, what's going to happen to the Brownfield program in the name? And during that first session, there were about six different EPA programs, which included water and urban agriculture came in, and RRMP came in, and they were talking about the different programs in EPA and how they might relate to brownfields. And that was kind of the first salvo of what's going to come. What has happened is the people in the brownfields job training program have reached out, and Mathy has reached out to the other program offices with the EPA and said, are you interested in expanding, you know, if you're doing urban agriculture, gardening in the cities on perhaps vacant property, you may want to get involved in the Brownfields job program. And they said, yeah, we would like to. So what had happened is this next year, they put in a small amount, maybe $500,000 into the program. If they get more interested and buy into the program, someone just joined?
Hey, Mike, this is Valerie.
Hey, Valerie.
How you doing?
great. We were talking about, and Valerie was there, we were talking about the Brownfields Conference and how we're going to expand just from working on brownfield remediation to a whole host of environmental programs, literally everything that the agency does, which would include water, solid waste, things like urban agriculture, air programs, and what the program will look like will be eventually it'll be a an environmental job training program in your community to train for any type of job. It's going to be a little more challenging because you can only do so much in a job training program, and we're now bringing in all these other programs. The people at EPA say, well, a lot of these will be awareness. It's something like urban agriculture might be tacked on to something else. We're going to have to look at innovative ways of combining our certification training. For example, if you're training a HAZWOPer, a lot of the HAZWOPer training, which is mandatory in brownfields training, can be used in the RMP training. So you could there will be ways of getting synergisms. If you've taken the HAZWOPer first, you may not have to take all of the, if you take them sequentially, you won't have to take all the same training over again in the RMP. And the same with lead and the asbestos program. And then, of course, when you get to urban agriculture, you're going to have this really good background of the nomenclature and the pollutants. Someone just joined?
Deep Kelly, City of Gallup.
Hey. Good for you.
Hi.
How are things in Gallup?
Outstanding. A little bit overcast, but all things considered, no complaints.
Well, that's it. The rest of us are complaining. I'm in Raleigh, and it's hot and humid and yuck.
Well, yeah, we're a little overcast, and that brings with it an elevated level of humidity, but nothing compared to what you guys get on the Atlantic coast. Being originally from the East Coast, I feel your pain. That's why I don't live out there anymore.
Well, we're all going to move to Gallup because Glo complains about the weather in the Midwest this summer. It's horrible there.
Yeah, although, you know, we did have the most perfect day the day before yesterday. It was like in the 70s, no humidity. It was absolutely perfect. But now this weekend, the humidity is coming back, and so is the heat. So.
Yeah, I'm sure being from the Midwest, you probably get six nice days a year, and the rest of them are either oppressively hot or oppressively cold.
Oh, gosh, no. We get a whole lot more than six.
Really?
those 10 days you get eaten by mosquitoes.
We're weather snobs out here in New Mexico. You know, we got all this sunshine.
Spoiled rotten.
Okay, let's get back to brownfields. I'm in. So anyway, what we see happening over the next year and perhaps the next 2 years, in the next year, the funding isn't going to go up a whole lot. I think they might get, they might expand from 10 to 12 grantees in this next round. Maybe they'll get some money between now and then and expand it more. But they will allow you to train any environmental occupation. So we've really been doing this all along. Someone just joined?
Yes, Jared Taylor from Youth Build Louisville.
Okay.
Darren. Popular call today.
Yeah.
We've got quite a few.
It's the last one. You start the last one.
It is the last one, and on that light, we're going to be starting up again in September 15th, and we're going to have another series, and we're going to let everyone decide what direction and what things they want to talk about in that one, and it'll be exciting because it'll overlay the next round of brownfield grants. There will be a meeting that I'll put in the notes. There's actually two meetings, and it's been a little confusing the way Joe put it. On the 2nd of September and then August 31st, there are two workshops that are going to be held by EPA, and I'll put the website so you could – it's a conference call. What I like to do is I like to put it on the computer, and then you could multitask, or you could call in. And he's going to go over the RFP, the technical aspects of the RFP.
It's August 30th, Mike, not the 31st.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
August 30th and then September 2nd.
Okay. Now, one of them is for tribal, and I was confused on the one is for HBCUs, tribal, and university, certain minority academic institutions. Glow, is that the 30th or the 2nd? I'll find out for sure which one.
No,
it's
the 30th. Mike, yeah. I already checked. It's the 30th.
The 30th yeah. for HBCUs and tribal.
Exactly. Is that also for any, we're a Hispanic serving. Would that be the one for
right.
Cochise College as well?
Right, right. But and that one, I would go to that one. Everyone's invited to both of them. So you could sign up for both of them if you want. There'll be some repetition. The one for the HBCUs and tribal will maybe have special situations for them. The second will be open to everyone. And to access that, you could go to clue, it's clu-in.org. I'll put it in the notes, /training/pound upcoming. But I'll put that in the notes, and you could sign up for it. There are, I think, are plenty of slots open, particularly on the web version of that. But he'll go through, and you could, I think what's also useful is he'll have a download of the PowerPoint presentation. Now, we usually preserve that, and we put it up on the toolbox and then send it out to everyone also.
You might want to keep in mind, too, that the RFP, they don't expect to release the RFP until the beginning of October. So this is, although Joe's going to be talking about the new FP, you won't actually have anything to look at.
Right. He should hopefully be going over it so we could start preparing for it. And while the applications aren't due until January, it seems like a long time because often they start gathering things in the last month, and you can't do that on job training because the problem is you have to establish partnerships, and establishing these partnerships takes quite a bit of time. And also to get a winning award, you really have to get the city to buy in, and you want the community to buy in. And so the strategy you want to use on these is start really early. You want to, and for the assessment pilots, they actually have public hearings. And one suggestion that was made at Brownfields, which is at the annual meeting, which is a good one, is see if you could dovetail with the assessment pilots whenever they have a public hearing to announce that you're intending to submit a grant for a job training program. And this not only links you to the assessment pilot's activities and gets you to know who they are, but it also is something you could use in your grants in terms of you're working with the community, you've made public service announcements, you've been at a public hearing where you've dovetailed with the assessment pilot. And this gives you a way ahead in advance. But to do this, it takes some time because these things are months apart. And so what you would want to do is early on find out when the next public hearing will be related to your assessment pilot. And you have to find out who they are and who their people are involved. And you don't need the money to get started. You just need to say, well, we're planning on submitting a proposal, or we're planning on re-upping our proposal if we have one, and we would like to get the ball rolling, and we'd like to work with you on this. And so you really have to do a lot of groundwork. The nice thing also about doing it this way is if the federal funds fall through, you might end up getting regional or local funds if you're really involved and you're really showing that you're determined to get this program going. You may get some other funds that are separate from the EPA funds, and then you could always use that as a dovetail, and or you could, if for some reason you didn't get the EPA grant, you could reapply the next year, and you could start operations and planning with the funds that you do receive. So,
Mike, do you want to talk about the extra session that we're going to have after the RFP is released?
Right. After the RFP, we usually have the RFP tends to be an EPA slant, and it seems to be this is what we're going to these are the basic criteria, and then here are the ranking criteria. The first one knocks you out of the box to see if you're qualifying. They're called qualifying criteria, and the whole first set just says, can you go on to step two? And then step two, they start ranking, and this is a very subjective score. They have people from the regions and people from NIEHS, and people are familiar with job training evaluating these, and they're instructed to go through these RFPs, go point by point, did he answer the question, how he answered the question, and assign points. And then they take these numerical scores, and they take, it's just like a test that you would take in school. They go from the top down. So it's really, it's not the best way to do it. Ideally, they should do site visits, and they should talk to the people, and they should, but they don't have an ability to do that. One of the things they said that the ARRA grants, for example, had about 100 applicants. They typically get about 35 or 40 for the Brownfields grant, so your chances are 1 in 3 of getting them. They're seeing this increasing, so they think that what will happen is the Brownfield, each year, the Brownfield grants are going to be increasing, so it might go from 1 out of 3 to 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 5 will get it. So it's so important that you do that extra thing that the other guy doesn't do to get you up higher up on the scale. But anyway, what EPA is going to do is talk about the technical aspects of it and how what the ranking criteria are, and they're just going to go criteria by criteria and go ranking. What we do is we're off the record, and we basically say, okay, this is what you have to do now, this is what you need to do it. And we start talking about the components of job training, and we can talk about things that are really important on those proposals, and we can help you with your proposal as you're going through the process. So we're going to have a special session on submitting the grants. We may have one or maybe two as we get closer. We'll see how things develop.
Well, and one of the other main differences is that ours is done after the RFP is released, so that you'll be able to have something to look at as we go through each one of those points that Mike just mentioned.
Right. One of the federal regulations is that the regional offices can help you as much as they can have time before the RFP is issued. And when the RFP is issued, a curtain comes down, and they can't help you with anything related to the grant. On a one-by-one basis, they can do some general public announcements, but they can't help individual grantees. But we can. We ask them very specifically if we're allowed to help grantees or potential grantees, and they said, yes, that's fine. That's fine. I think that any of you who are also interested in submitting a grant need to get in touch with your regional rep, and you need to let them know that you're going to be submitting or interested in submitting a grant, and they'll put your name on a list, and they're going to kind of nurture you along, because it's in the best interest of the regional's representatives to have lots of applications from their region. It makes them look better, so they're going to be interested in helping you and making sure that you get an application in, and, or if you've got an application now, how you might re-up. And the other thing is that the other grantees are really eager to help you. And, Glow, I think it would be a good idea. Don't you think we should send everyone, we could attach it in an email, everyone the participant list of the grantee meeting?
Oh, yeah, that'd be fine.
I think that would be really helpful to everyone, we'll have this grantee list. These are people who attended the meeting, which are most of the grantees, and also it has the regional reps' contact information in there too. And what I would suggest is you might contact everyone that is near you or that you might find that you'd like to talk to them about their program and some of the things they did, what kind of certs that they offer, some of the problems they had. And I'm sure anyone in the PLC would be happy to help you, and anyone that attended any at the conference would be happy to help you. I think also as a wrap-up to what we've done over the last couple sessions is I've got when we send out these announcements, we usually send 10 at a time, so we don't get into junk mail. And we'll send everyone a complete list of everyone in the PLC. So you'll get these names and emails of everyone in the PLC. And if there's anyone you want to contact by email, you can write them and ask them questions or correspond back and forth.
There's also the outreach listserv, which you guys are all a member of. If there's any time that you want to ask a question of the group, rather than plugging in everybody's email address, you could just simply put it out on the outreach listserv, and it would go to everyone automatically.
Right. Hello? 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 Oh, are you all there?
Yeah, we're here.
I'm
here.
Oh, okay, we're having a lightning storm. So
if
some reason I get cut off in the next 10 minutes, well, Globe can take it over. It's I think, though, that the thing to prepare for, and one other thing I noticed in the annual meeting is that we see that the funding is probably going to be increasing. So I think there are some good things ahead. There is talk about maybe either extending from 2 to 3 years the grant period, and from 200 to 300, or, you know, ideally 500,000. So it all depends on appropriations, and certainly depends on what kind of funding comes down the stream. But I think it's a positive. Everyone was very positive about the program, and it'll be expanding rather than contracting. So I think things look good. I think the dark note on the workshop, and it's what we were going to talk about today, is the whole area of placement. And we're in a really difficult economic time, and EPA is, of course, constantly being asked by Congress, you want more money, or you want us to give you this money, how many people you're placing, and what, you know, Congress asks numbers. They don't want to give money out and not have any numbers. And so the people in EPA, from the administrator, goes down to Matthew and, well, how many people have we placed and what kind of programs we have and who's graduating and what all of these. So we know fairly well how many we're training, but placing is probably that the dark side of this whole program. It's one thing to train, another to place, and it's the hardest part of the whole program. And I think that those of us who are in the business know how hard it is to place people in tough economic times. And things will probably get better, but getting through it is tough. And so we try to do the best we can. And one thing I think that we saw is that we have to put more emphasis on the placement side of this. Often we're so focused on training, and particularly if we're involved in community colleges or a training organization, we'll be training. And then once we think they're trained in the college environment, kids go out and get their jobs. They've been trained, they have credentials, they get their jobs. Well, here we can't drop them off at training. We can't drop them off at the end of training and say, here, go get a job. We really have to be proactive in the placement activity. And I think whether it's said in the RFP or not, I think there's going to be a huge emphasis on placement. And they want people to commit how many you're going to place, and they want to try to hold them to that placement. So I think that in the planning and in the future, we're going to have to focus a lot on placing. And, of course, if we back up the idea of placement, it gets back to the quality of student, and it gets back to the curriculum that we're going to have. And I think in Paula's part of the country, we see weatherization and RMP being the big things. It seemed that the three power certifications were HAZWOPR, which you have to have, RRMP, which is lead, and painting, basically, painting buildings before 1978 that might have lead in them, and then weatherization. And those seem to be the areas where there are jobs, and it seems like there's a lot of jobs in weatherizations in certain cities, and in some cities there aren't. And so I guess the advice being is, if you look at this whole idea of weatherization and RRMP first, because there's going to be large numbers of people, and it might be easy placements. Then go to the more difficult jobs, the remediation jobs, where there may not, it's more specialized and there are fewer people that will be employed. And in a time of hard economic times, those are the jobs that are tough to get because they're being filled by others. So if in your general landscape in this pre-planning, you might want to start feeling out when is the weatherization money going to hit? And if weatherization money is going to hit, RRMP, if you're in an older community, RRMP fits right into it because if you have a window and the window needs to be pulled out, someone is going to have RRMP. So they go hand in hand.
One of the things at the grantee meeting, we did a large group session on job placement, and on that panel there were two contractors. One was a gentleman from CDM, which is a nationwide contractor, and then another guy was a nationwide environmental recruiter. And they were asked the question, what was most important to them as a contractor or an employee when they hire people to be part of a company? And the answer was that they wanted reliability. They wanted someone that they could depend on to show up for work every day and do a good job. Even more important than the certifications that they hold, the fact that they showed up for work every day was more important. So along with the certifications, it's also important that you screen your students as you recruit so that you can get those good ones out there.
Well, they brought up a lot of issues, things like have everyone look at their cell phone and examine what kind of ringtone you're using and what kind of answering machine, if it's going to be Big Daddy or whatever, and the employer goes to call and gets music that he may not be accustomed to hearing or names that he wouldn't appreciate. And they were even talking about the Facebook page in terms of, now, I don't know that the participants are going to go and start cleansing their Facebook pages, but it's something to be aware of.
Email address?
The recruiter said they're looking at Facebook pages now. They're calling on and they're leaving messages on answering machines. So when you ask someone for an interview and he calls you up on your cell phone, get that message straight so that he's not going to be completely turned off and not call you back or not leave a message. So they were talking about, they were mostly life skills issues, and unfortunately in this grant the life skills aren't covered by the grant, but they're just so important in a placement process.
This is Rebecca Orozco at Cochise College, and we've been participating in the Pathways Out of Poverty grant.
Yes.
I've learned a couple of valuable lessons on this grant, and one of them is to make sure that you, as you put it together, you designate somebody first for recruitment to get people into your program and also for finding those jobs. And with the Pathways grant, we've had, you know, in our very rural county, we've had over 200 people start into the process.
Wow.
We found two employers, one local and one in Phoenix, both of whom have guaranteed placement for 120 of those people if we get them through the whole training certification process. So we wouldn't have found that if we had not designated a person who had that as their job.
Now, Rebecca, what area are they going to place them in? What have they specified?
Well, one is in environmental remediation for Freeport-McMoRan, the big mining company, who's doing there was a huge mine here that closed in 1976, and they're doing environmental testing and then remediation over the long term. And we're going to be offering certification, and they have 25 positions open right now. For people who have HAZWOPER and the OSHA certification. So we're doing those certifications, and we'll be moving people into those jobs right away. And Sterling Electronics, who builds solar panels in Phoenix, has 100 openings for people to go up and work on those panels, and it's considered a green job. We're doing electronics training, but we wouldn't have had that if we didn't have somebody out knocking on doors and trying to find the jobs.
And it could be as important as your trainer will be your recruitment / placement specialist. Are you using the same person for both?
No, we have a recruitment placement person specifically designated. And I've worked in the CBJT grant and the WIRED grant as well, both of which we had very limited success. And I put it all on having that designated person. And so as I write my grant for the Brownfields job training, that's going to be a huge piece in there, is having the designated conduit in the grant that we write.
I think that's an excellent idea. And I think they're going to be looking for that too, because there was so much emphasis on numbers and jobs. The other thing that I'm surprised wasn't brought up, it might have been brought up in the breakout sessions, is the timing of your program. Timing's everything. If you've got 20 or 30 graduates that are in the middle of winter and there are no outside environmental jobs in, say, remediation, it's not going to happen. You again want to talk to the employers, and this gets back to your placement specialist, who will say, well, we're going to have jobs, but they're going to be in June of 11. So you may have to back your program up and say, okay, let's start as a start point June 11 and work backwards through the program, you know, so that the timing will be, so when our graduates are coming out, that we're going to be in a maximum employability zone. And there'll be other parts of the year that it's just dead and there's no hiring going on. So I think that idea of a specified person, does that person do anything else besides placement?
We call them the case manager. They do the recruitment as well. They go around and visit the various one-stop job placement offices to talk to out-of-work people. They've been contacting, like, veterans and associations. That we actually have two, because we're an area, a region-wide, and one works in one area and one in another. So they actually are out finding the people to go into the program and kind of walking them through, and then they're also out there looking for the employers. So the success of the program, I think, is largely because we have a good stream of people coming in, and the community colleges are not very good at that kind of recruitment, so this has been excellent. And then also that we have jobs ready for them and when they come out. So that those positions, what we call a case manager positions, have been key to the Pathways grant. And the whole grant is kind of building the foundation for what I hope the Brownfields long-term program will be.
Right. And that's excellent. And that is an allowable cost. They spend a lot of time on what's allowable and what's the not allowable cost under grant. That would be, both recruitment and placement, would be an allowable cost under the Brownfields grants supported by EPA. So, excellent. I think all the successful grantees are going to need to do something like that. And I have the feeling they'll be reflected in the ranking criteria in the grant, whether it's specified or not. They may ask a general question. How do you, in fact, those are the trap questions you have to look at. How do you feel you're going to address placement or whatever? And if someone plays token to that, they might get 2 points. And if someone says, we have a specified or we've hired a placement recruitment manager whose sole duty is to recruit, get to know, and to place. And the nice thing I like about what you're doing is that the recruiter gets to know the student through the program. When you call him a case manager, he becomes intimate with the student and knows who he is. So when he talks to the employer, he can vouch for him and say, I know him, I've met his family. You know, it's not that he's spent the last 2 weeks of the program with him. He's followed him through the whole program. So he could recommend him. He could say, you know, these are personal issues he has, or these are the issues he's got. But he's a hard worker. He wakes up every morning at such and such, or this is, you know, he's a single parent, and he needs this job, and he'll do a good job. So those are the kind of things that person could do. I think that's a great, great idea, and good luck on your Pathways to Poverty. So you're, I think, the only one of us that has that grant, and it's great that you got it, because there were I think some other people have it, but in a very minor sense. It sounds like yours is a major piece of that pathways that was awarded to you.
We're doing the training for the local grantee, which is actually our Council of Government.
Right.
But because that whole piece was four councils of government who got it, so it was a huge amount of money. The part that's actually coming through for training is about $600,000.
That's great. Well, listen, we used our 30 minutes, and what I'd like to do is thank everyone for participating, and we'll still continue to do some emailing and interchanging between each other, and we'd probably also like to remind you of the Brownfields Toolbox and the listserv that GLOW maintains, that if you have a question, you can put it up on the listserv, and we'll send out a notice about the listserv to everyone so that you'll get a refreshed reminder of it. And if you have a question, you can just put it on the listserv, and people usually respond fairly quickly to that. And then in about the first week of September, late August, we'll start sending out notices about the new round of PLC so we can keep in contact and get everyone rolling through the fall. Anyone have anything they want to add at this point?
So, Mike, the next call is going to be, you said, September 15th?
It'll be September 15th, and we'll just take a little break and we'll start again. I think in that first call we'll talk about things we want to discuss during those sessions and some of the issues that are coming up and then kind of go from there.
Okay.
And between now and then, just feel free to use email and we can discuss things on email. Okay, well, thanks all for participating, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Okay.
Great.
Bye.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike. Bye. GLOW.